There's five guys that wrote this song, which is almost
they might
like
have needed six.
Too many cooks in the kitchen.
Yeah.
All right, here we are, recording again. Last week we were, welcome back to the podcast, say what you will. Last week we were in my, or last month we were in my cabin with the rain, and now we're at the West Studio cabin of Mark's camper, and it's raining. So you're going to hear a lot of rain in the back. Please keep checking us out on Twitter and the Facebook group if you haven't found. It's in the show notes of the podcast. And let's get rolling. What's going on, guys?
Let's do it.
Hey, Derek. Not
What's
much.
Happening? Anything?
Not too much.
Not much. Looking forward to talking about these three cool albums, reviewing those.
Massive albums.
Yep. Two of the three.
Two of them.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, who wants to start with any news items?
Can I, Derek? I'll go. I'll lead off.
I'm gonna have a hard time hearing you in this.
Yeah,
I'm just kidding.
No, the
rain is brutal.
The whole Rat is doing a deluxe reissue box set, and the price of it is $225. And it's when you look at like the track listing, it's remastered, all their albums remastered, but there's really not anything else on there. And it's just, I just don't understand this whole direction that bands are doing, where they're doing these reissues or remastered. And I guess you could say, well, when you remaster a song, it sounds better or it sounds more current, but for a casual listener, I guess like me, I just don't see the value. Why pay all that money for that whole catalog when you already got it?
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't make any sense.
I think it's LP only too, right?
Oh yeah, in the Rat case, yeah.
LP.
What's that?
Did you say it was? You can only get it on LP
right now. Yep.
Yeah. Huh. So this goes, I think it was a couple episodes back, I mentioned the Van Halen one, Right Here, Right Now, was released. And you guys were dumbfounded when I said it was $130, I think it was.
What are you getting for your buck?
I don't know.
I mean, I saw a video on Facebook of Hagar actually getting it in the mail and opening up like he was super excited about this. Yeah, but it's like, Where is the excitement coming from? I mean, it's the same album. It's the same album we recorded 30 years ago. I think it was an album. I think it was an LP.
It was. It's their live Here Right Now thing.
But like you touched on, what's the difference to the album you bought then?
Well, I think we went through this with the Led Zeppelin reissues, right? Where Page was remastering and he did these deluxe versions, and what he did was he tried to put like these outtakes and he did like some live material that wasn't released before, and that had some value, I guess, but still, you know, I mean, he would release one album and then go to the next one. But Whitesnake's doing that too. Coverdale is just did Good to Be Bad or something, album with Aldridge, which is a current release. It was released in the early 2000s, and it's like being called still Good to Be Bad, I believe. And when you look at it, it's like, this is the same material. There's no like B-sides or what.
Well, that's
what
you
know,
would
if you're gonna rebuy
to see
this,
is like unreleased or something different than what you've already bought from this band previously. You know, where's the value in buying the same thing again?
I think it's funny when you look at I'll look at iTunes, like for example the Whitesnake release, and it'll say you know, like you look at the reviews and they'll say, great music, this is awesome. It's like, no shit. You know, I'm we're talking about right. the quality of the release. And is
87 album's a great release?
No, oh, no, 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 no. I'm talking about the Still Good to Be Bad.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Right. Yo, like, which is, we've got Doug Aldridge and Red Beach.
Right,
it's not bad. Good songwriting. But the thing is, or even the Led Zeppelin stuff. When Page did this Led Zeppelin, he did the Led Zeppelin 2 Deluxe. And then you look at the reviews, and these are the people buying this, are rating the material. Like the music, the songs, and it's like, well, no shit, it's legendary. We're talking about like the reissue, and is it worth buying again when you already got it?
You know, well, that's what I'm saying. You have to offer something else in the package that's not what you already know or purchased. I mean, about some unreleased or some live stuff, or you have to put something in there that's beyond what you've already know or heard or why, you know?
Well,
and I don't know, this Rat one, Rat's doing a box set.
That's what he was talking about.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, who cares? I got all the Rat collection. I got all the Rat albums.
And the remastered part, is it enough for you to spend $225 on it?
No.
No, exactly.
And my other question, I think we talked about this earlier, is, aren't there certain bands out there that can do box sets? And there's got to be a level of success or popularity involved with bands that are doing box sets. Like, I expect a box set from Led Zeppelin. I expect a box set from Van Halen if they ever did one. The Stones. You know what I mean? It's like certain bands can do that. Rat? Are they even on that level of box set?
Good
you know question. What I mean? Like Slaughter. I mean, are they even really entitled to do a box set album?
No, it's a good
what
question.
Are you getting out of some of these bands? Like,
Mark, I don't even think I'd pay $225 for a remastered Led Zeppelin. I mean, Van Halen with Roth. I mean,
they have remastered them, but...
But what are you remastering? I can put on the original Van Halen 1 album on an album or a cassette or a CD. There ain't nothing wrong with that.
No.
What are you remastering? You can't...
Well, there's probably some audio geeks out there.
Yeah, but I like that.
No, I know.
I like the original...
Well, it's like
recordings of these songs.
Well, it's like going to a live show and hearing a key missed or, you know, a rim shot. And people, you know, that's awesome. That's what we'd like to hear. But now everything's tracked and you don't hear any of that. It's like, who wants this perfect show?
No, I don't like that.
No.
You know, I like kind of and that was kind of Van Halen. I know we talk about Van Halen in all these podcasts, but...
They're a pretty good band.
But I like the fact that they left a lot of mistakes on their albums.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what made it great.
Yep.
Right.
All right.
Yeah, I don't know why they're doing it, so.
Well, it's a cash grab, right?
Yeah.
Make money off that material, kind of re-energize it, maybe get a younger
audience. Yeah, but I mean,
but
who's waiting around for a Rat box set? Is there a demand? Is there a demand for that?
Well, I wonder if you can even see the numbers of how it's being sold.
Although.
And it's all through Piercy.
Right.
Yeah, and like you said, it's a cash grab. And I guess Blotzer's been. Oh, I guess I do have a little bit of news about Blotzer saying that he made some comments about how their music over the years was a lot better than Motley Crue. Because, you know, those two were kind of like.
I agree too.
I think Rat had better songs.
I agree. Yeah. I agree.
They just
didn't have the persona. You know what I mean?
Well, they didn't have the.
Sorry, I didn't mean to. That's okay. We've got a.
You need a lighter?
Mark, you're being called out. Yeah, they just didn't have the persona of
the notorious behavior.
Right.
You know, they, you know, the trouble they got in, right. And yep. You know, the dating the Hollywood actresses and the strippers, and you know, Rat never kind of went up that.
Right.
You know, and let's be honest here. I think a lot of Motley's success is based on their notorious behavior.
Yeah.
You know. You know, I like a lot of the Motley Crue songs. I like the first couple albums. There's been some duds, I thought, out there. But Rat didn't seem to capture that.
No.
You know?
No, I know. So the Monsters of Rock cruise was a few weeks ago, and Trunk was live on the cruise talking, and so he interviewed... I wanted to bring this up because Mark would never hear this, but he interviewed the members of Kix, and cool guys. I feel bad that we hated that first album, but they probably hate the first album.
Yeah.
Right.
But something I learned on that interview is the drummer, like a few years ago, was playing the kit and slouched over, had a heart attack, and was bent down over the kit.
Awful.
And they just stopped. Yeah. And I think it's the bass player is actually a certified EMT. And
what
one
are
the
chances
and
that?
One of the roadies. And they brought him back to life.
Wow.
Where he needed to be. And
saved his
he
life.
Kept going.
Saved his life. Yeah, no. But how crazy is that?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, it's just, you know, when you listen to interviews with them, and I've seen them play at M3. Just a great group of guys.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
That lead singer. I mean, I don't particularly like his voice and the songwriting.
See, I like
but,
him.
Yeah. But, you know, but good dude. And, you know, the other thing, too, that, you know, just recently in the news is they're done.
Yeah. They announced the last show in, like, September. And...
Well, yeah, because I just saw something online that one of the original guys that hasn't been in the band is coming back. Because they're doing a farewell.
It's another guitar player.
Yeah, one of the guitar players is coming back because they know it's kind of like a farewell.
I imagine that drummer will play in it too. He was actually on the cruise with them talking about it. So it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
But the other thing that came out of one of those interviews is that Extreme, on the first night that they played on the cruise, the guys in Kix were right in the front of the stage. And so before they played Play With Me, Nuno goes, "Hey, I got to say this, but I want to let you guys know," he's talking to the Kix guys, "this song is completely ripped off from you."
Wow.
From Kix?
Kix used to come up to Boston and play Narcissus a lot.
Yeah.
And they used to go all the time. And Nuno said he totally lifted that song from Kix.
A song. Wow.
Not the solo.
No.
But he totally stole it. And I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. So, you got anything else on this?
No, I don't have anything else,
Mark,
as far as...
Nothing on your end?
You don't have anything?
The only other... the Aerosmith... speaking of calling it quits, Aerosmith, being the final tour. I mean, we kind of knew this was
coming.
Yeah,
but who's buying into this as the final tour?
Well, the issue is the drummer's been out of the band. He's had health problems. Tyler's, what, 75, 76?
Yeah.
He's at the end, I think. But I tried to get tickets through the roof.
Oh, is it?
Oh, my God. They're playing the Garden New Year's. I've seen them at the Garden New Year's.
Yeah.
And I was just like, you know what? I'm not paying this.
No.
The one thing I may do is go down the day of and try to score, you know, a $200 ticket. That would be cheaper than
$1,400 if you can get it. Yeah.
So, you guys want to touch on the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame at all?
No. Oh.
Well, you know, I have a bitter taste in my mouth about that. I don't know if we've talked about this in prior podcasts. I still don't understand how
Kate Bush
groundbreaking bands, legendary bands, are not in the Hall of Fame before bands that came out 25 to 30 years later.
Yeah.
I don't understand that.
I love Rage Against the Machine.
Oh, I love them too.
But they shouldn't be in the Rock and Roll of Fame over Foreigner, Bad Company, you know.
Iron Maiden. Come on.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, I think the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame loses a lot of their legitimacy when they do stuff like that. You have to acknowledge the people that have paved the way for the rest of these bands.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, you can sit there and say, okay, Rage Machine doesn't sound like Iron Maiden, Judas Priest, and all these bands, but these guys that are in these bands, like Rage Machine, they're influenced by that stuff in some facet. You cannot be a rock and roll band and get into music and not be influenced by
Bad Company
and Judas Priest and Iron Maiden and Deep Purple and all these. Without them, there's nothing. Yeah. You know, and for them to get overlooked year after year after year, you know what I mean? It's just, it's not right.
And I don't know when Rage came out. It's got to be sometime in the 90s, right? 92, 3?
Yeah, they were early.
But 90s. Like Alice in Chains, not before them?
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's just nutty.
You know, like Deep Purple just got in, what, 5 years ago? It's like, are you kidding me? Deep Purple?
And, you know, they've got Kate Bush going in. And then some other, Willie's going in, but that's okay. But
why isn't he already in there?
No, I know. But Kate Bush, I'm like, I think they do this nuttiness for the conversation. Because it, you know, we're a little behind on this podcast with it. You know, it happened, you know, the beginning of the month.
Right.
But, you know, everyone was blowing up about it. And it was just like.
But how can a guy like Willie Nelson, who's been in, well, first of all, he's not rock. I don't know what the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, a lot of the bands that are artists that are getting in there aren't even rock bands.
Right.
But how can Willie Nelson, who's been around since the late 60s, who's a groundbreaking, what do you call him, country artist.
Musician.
How are you not in there before Rage Against the Machine or Nirvana or all these bands?
Kate Bush.
Come on.
So my feeling with it is it's a complete fraud. It shouldn't exist. Who gives a shit about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Well,
this is rock music. Rock music.
It's losing its credibility.
Yeah, but I don't even think it should exist. I think when you think about rock and roll music, and you think about the people that have created that music, it was always about like giving the middle finger to something, whether it's
right.
The government or whether it's, you know, it's about people making music, living on the streets or living in a van. And it's like the recognition is in the sense that people buy the music or they go and they listen to the music or watch the band. So what I did is Chrissy Hyde from the Pretenders.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, I'm not going to read her whole quote, but this sums it up to me. Quote, "If anyone wants my position in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, they are welcome to it. I don't even want to be associated with it. It's just more establishment slapping. I got in a band, so I didn't have to be part of all that."
Right.
And that's just part of the quote.
Yeah.
But the point where, and I agree, you know, I love that she said this because
right.
It's like, I lived on the streets. I created this music, not to be recognized by this corporate bullshit.
No.
And be, so to me, it's like the whole rock and roll, who cares?
Yeah.
I can't believe
it's just, you know, watered down now, and it
doesn't
have
anything.
Any weight to it anymore.
It doesn't mean anything.
It doesn't
you're
mean
in the
anything.
Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. What does that mean?
I mean, you got Van Halen that went in, what, 30 years ago, and Eddie didn't even show up. You know what I mean? It was like, what's that tell you?
Yeah.
They just don't care.
There's no credibility.
There's no credibility to that.
I mean,
anymore.
If you're a true musician, what are you basing your success on, being recognized in a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Right. And there's artists from the 60s that are up for it, and I'm like, 60s?
Dennis, I thought we solved that in the last podcast that we were not musicians.
Yeah, right.
Dennis, nice shirt.
Oh,
Headbangers Ball. There you go.
Headbangers Ball t-shirt. Nice.
So she writes just the last sentence in this, and I'm sorry to go back to this because she goes, last sentence in her quote is, it's absolutely nothing to do with rock and roll. And anyone who thinks it is a fool.
I agree.
To me, that sums it up. Sex Pistols, Led Zeppelin. You think Jimmy Page, thank you. I needed this validation.
Right.
That I'm a great musician because I'm on the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Right.
Yeah.
Means nothing.
It's not the same thing as Baseball Hall of Fame or Football Hall of Fame. It doesn't make any sense.
Nah. And just the way they're doing it and the people that are leaving out for years and years and the order of which they're putting these artists in, it's ruined the credibility of the whole thing.
Yeah.
You know?
So I sent you guys a video, and I don't know if you watched it, on AI, artificial intelligence, on music.
Wow.
And I just wanted to say one thing. So there was a video I watched of Paul McCartney singing Ramble On. But it's not, it's him singing Ramble On to Ramble On music by Led Zeppelin, but he's never done that. So AI created it from his voice and his vocals.
That's almost creepy to me.
It is.
You know?
But it is nutty what they can do now with it. But I got thinking, how amazing would it be if they took the first 6 Van Halen albums, spliced them up, track-wise.
Yeah.
And had it write a new Van Halen song with Dave's voice from back then, Eddie's tone.
It
could write a new song, and it could be called,
they could do anything.
Nails. It could be, it could be anything.
But I almost hate that technology is available to do that. Rock and roll is about writing songs.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? I hate the fact, the organicness of writing songs and creating stuff and making it legendary is gone with this technology.
We're headed that way because there are folks that buy tickets to see Motley Crue with background tracks or go see Wasp. Where the guy's like, I'm not really singing.
Right.
And they're buying that. It's okay because there was a funny quote I saw with Nikki Sixx where this guy, recently there's been some, another video or whatever film that showed Nikki Sixx like with his hands away from his bass and his bass
is the bass
going.
Is playing.
And the guy's like, you know what? I'd rather listen to that and see that than have him play.
Well, you got to start, evaluating the situation and saying, do I want to hear something that sounds good or do I want to hear what Motley Crue in 2023 really sounds like live?
But you know, AI, maybe that's where we're going.
Yeah.
I mean, fake.
Fake.
You buy fake.
I would listen tomorrow, though, to a new Van Halen tune from 82 with all those guys.
Well, your curiosity is there because, what you could do with it, but,
A couple other things I have. All right, well, I've got a couple other just quickies. Oh, unless you have another one, Dennis.
Nope, right to you, man.
A couple of quickies that I also sent you guys, that Van Halen documentary that's coming out next Thursday.
Yeah, 25th or something.
Free, and it covers just 1984, which...
Well, my concern with that is this is a fan-based documentary. So you wonder how much more can they know than we know. And it's not coming from the inside. This is not like Noel Monk is doing a documentary and he's got the inside intel on this band. I mean, fans only can know so much, right?
Well, I don't know. So, Greg's book. Fuck, I thought I knew everything about Van Halen, but reading that thing, or I listened to it. No, I listened to it. Holy smokes. Like, that whole time period of, 73 to 78 when they got signed was completely in the dark. And I mean, he interviewed people that were at backyard parties back then. He interviewed people that carried, you know, amps, and he, you know.
Yeah, but do you think these guys at this documentary have that?
Sure.
Connection?
Well, Greg's working. Greg's helping him on it. So.
Oh, he's involved in it. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah.
Gee, Mark. Thanks for letting the air out of the mud
below. Well, I saw that a fan, it said right in it, a fan-generated documentary. I'm like, all right, fans are doing it.
I mean, they didn't contact you.
Well, no. Well, but I'm in the same boat. I only know so much about Van Halen 84. I don't know, like, the inside.
But look at all the pictures that are coming out. Like, so I'm sure there's, I'm hoping there's some nuggets in there that were like.
Yeah, yeah. You know, we'll have to see.
He did one for Black Sabbath, I think, the same guy. And I think it was well received.
Oh, he's already done one. Okay.
Yep, he did a five-part series. No, the Van Halen one, I think, is a five-part series.
All right.
But that should be good. And then one other. Oh, I got two other things. You know who Andrew Hagar is?
Sammy's son.
Yep. He's getting, he was complaining, he's getting totally, like, harassed by Ross fans when he's on stage. I'm like, oh my god, the poor kid can't be out there playing.
Why though? Why?
I don't know, but they're rabid Ross fans.
It's almost like Stern, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Where they just come out and just
like Stuttering John.
Yeah.
Yep. So you were just telling me before we started about Taylor Swift doing three nights at Foxborough.
Yeah.
This weekend, selling out every night. So I got this little bit of headline here. So Elton John, he's on a nine-leg and still counting Yellow Brick Road farewell tour. And they're saying it's grossing $800 million as of February. And then they also went on to say that some other tour grossed a shit ton. But they're saying Taylor Swift's tour is expected to, and this is just like 1 year tour,
right?
$600 million. They're saying not long as it's going to be up into the billions that these bands are making.
Wow.
On a tour.
I don't know one song she sings.
No, I don't either.
I wouldn't know one song from her.
I think we're alone.
Or
I think we're alone.
You could play it and I say, oh, that's her. You know what I mean? But I don't know.
All right. Well, let's get into the bands.
Sounds good.
The albums.
Yeah.
What do you want to go first with?
Let's do Iron Maiden.
Iron Maiden, Peace of Mind.
Okay.
So I didn't do any, I don't know why, I just looked at my notes and I didn't do any background on this album or anything. I just did the songs.
Yep.
So I know you guys did because.
Yep. So a couple things if you don't mind. It's so difficult for me to objectively analyze this album because it's such a big piece of my
both of
youth.
Us.
Right.
Right.
Right. This is such a huge album. I remember buying it once, buying it twice. I just remember listening to it.
You have the reissue?
I don't.
Is there one?
Just before we get into the analytics of the songs, producer engineer Martin Birch.
Right.
Okay. Previous work, Fleetwood Mac, Deep Purple, Rainbow. Okay. He also did Black Sabbath, Mob Rules, or Heaven and Hell, then Mob Rules. And he also did some work with Blue Oyster Cult. Quite frankly, probably one of the greatest hard rock producers out there. This particular release, U.S. Billboard, reached number 14. 14. Oh. Yeah. U.K., it was number 3. So keep in mind, this is 1983. The new wave of British heavy metal is coming.
Yeah.
But a lot of these bands that had these albums back then, they didn't get the commercial success yet, right? Because they were starting something new. This is Nickel McBrain, the drummer, fantastic drummer. This is his first album. Did you know that?
Yeah,
Mark?
Yeah.
Okay, you did know that.
Yeah, he took over for Clive Burr. Is that his name? Clive Burr?
Yep,
yeah.
So this was his first album. That's the background.
Yeah, and I think this is a turning point for this band. You know, of course, they had the earlier albums with the original singer. Then they had Number of the Beast with Bruce. But this album, I think, kind of really did it for them. You know what I mean? This is like their entry into, you know, into heavy metal, you know, dominance. You know, I think this band was kind of, I don't know if you would say they were underground, but you know, they had their fans. But with this album, I think they became a little more mainstream, a little more household, a little more, you know, they had an MTV video, you know what I mean? I think this is their turning point of this band.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
I think
it took them to another level.
You got to see this. We talked about this, I think, a few other podcasts before. When you have a band, it's not like the Steve Harris Band or whatever. I mean, this is called Iron Maiden. I mean, so, I mean, they got to overcome that. You know what I mean?
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Like, so the music has got to be so strong that, you know, like you look at Iron Maiden and you're going, oh, wait a minute here. Immediately, you're probably pushing away, right? But then the music comes in and it pulls you in, right? I just think the drums throughout this album are unbelievable.
Yeah,
this
great.
Is a masterpiece as far as that guy's playing. And I think that, you know, Dickinson, Bruce Dickinson, is a powerful singer, as we've noted before, and I think we'll probably note in this release, but he doesn't oversing. Like we talked about, like with he lets the musicians build up with the music,
yeah.
And we'll get into that in more detail. Right, Kevin Dubrow, who's screaming, yelping, and everything else, and you're like, it's just too much. But I think with Dickinson is that he's such a great singer that he's good because he doesn't oversing. He knows when not to sing.
He knows when to pull it back. He knows how to just sing for the song and not like, I think like we touched on with Dubrow was pay attention to me. You know what I mean? I want to be all over this album. You're going to hear me screaming and yelling. And it's the Dubrow show. Well, I think Dickinson is good enough where he can just play for the song and what the song needs, but he's still good and talented enough where he's going to shine through anyway.
The other thing I'd like to mention, and at the risk of you guys thinking I'm nuts, all right, and you know, people out there listening to this podcast, feel free to jump in and say, Dennis, you're out of your mind. I think when you listen to Iron Maiden's music and you, let's say you strip it down, you take the heaviness out of it, when you think about American hard rock and metal, there's like that blues element, American blues,
right?
But when you strip down Iron Maiden, it's almost like this like Renaissance vibe. That in their music, like dun 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 dun, 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 you know,
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah,
like that. You know, it's really built into that.
But I think it almost was their signature sound. They created their own identity, their own sound. You know what I mean? Because they didn't do that. You know what I mean? They kind of like when you hear an Iron Maiden song, you know it's Iron Maiden. You know, and a lot of times that's not easy to do, you know what I mean, to be able to separate yourself from everything else that's going on and become your own, like Led Zeppelin did it, you know what I mean? There's certain bands that can just say, man, it's just that band, just that's their thing, that's their sound. I think Iron Maiden speaks to that.
But you wouldn't say that Iron Maiden like name a song that's blues orientated from Iron
Maiden. No, that's
There's
not
none.
Their thing.
And so what I'm saying, what where is that?
They took
music
a different approach.
From? You know,
well, the classics, the classical. I mean, it has a heavy classical element.
Good point, Derek. Yep. Yep.
I think it's a combination of classical and I think it's a
this is not criticism.
No.
I'm just saying.
No, not at all.
Where is it coming from? That's a great point.
But I think Bruce Dickinson's storytelling, the way he presents a song with his lyrics, it's almost like he's reading from a novel. It's like, wow, he's telling you a story.
Yeah, but I'm talking about the music, the riff.
Or the music, too. Yeah, it's just like, yeah, I mean, you listen to it and you're almost like, you think of something, you know what I mean? Like, wow, I can see the, like, going into battle or
Stormy the Castle.
Yeah, well, right. Yeah, but Stormy the Castle in a good way.
Yeah.
Like, they did it the right way, right. You know what I mean? Like, they paint a picture for you,
yeah.
You know
yeah.
what I mean? That's what I get out of these guys.
So I will go on the record and say that Iron Maiden wasn't part of my upbringing, but I can still appreciate the music and like it. But again, I come from the more bluesier background, so that's where my difference
right.
is.
Right.
But I still like it.
Right.
So, all right, let's jump in, right?
Sure.
Where Eagles Dare, is that? Yeah.
I guess I'll go on this. I mean, Nick McBrain opens up this track with one of the most legendary drum fills in hard rock history. If you're a drummer...
Like you are.
Like I am. This is one of the most classic intros to a heavy metal album. I mean, this is like one of the first things you learn when you're playing drums. It's like, I want to learn the intro to Where Eagles Dare. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just classic drum fill. You know what I mean? It's like, you don't even have to be a drummer. You hear that and you're like, I know what that is, right? Great opening track. I mean, this is the song you want to open up your album with, right? Comes right out of the gate. Kick ass. You know, and they do a lot of this, like the rhythms behind the solos and stuff like that. They always change it. Because a lot of times you go into the solo, we're just gonna play the rhythm we played in the,
right.
You know what I mean? They always change it up. And they got this great rhythm behind the guitar solo. You know, first song in the album, 6 minutes.
This is not a
short song, right?
But again, I think this is another example of where Dickinson is just allowing the band to play. You know, like he sings.
Well, he's picking
and then
his spots.
He just backs off. There's a long jam, and then that leads right into those, you know, double guitar solo.
Yeah, great song.
Yep.
I mean,
I wrote, Mark, how about that drumming?
You covered
that.
Yeah.
But I also did write, sometimes my head, I can't sometimes wrap my head around the complexities of the music. And I get...
Yeah.
This sounds weird, but I get tired listening to it. Like, it's not something I...
It's a workout.
Yeah, I can't have it on in the background because I want to pay attention to what's going on, and I can't do what I'm doing to work.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's a lot of this music hits me. It's like,
right.
Oh, my God, it's so complex. And
Steve Harris is all over this, you know.
Yeah. All right, next song. Revelations.
Slower tempo, but strong. It picks up, and then boom, off we go.
Yeah.
You know, Bruce Dickinson wrote this song. This comes in at 6 minutes, 51 seconds.
Yeah, I mean, these songs are not short songs. But like I've talked about on other podcasts, if it's a good song, that 6 minutes goes by quick.
Yeah, it holds you.
If it's a shitty song, it's like, okay. But, I mean, these songs, I mean, you know, I like the way Dickinson starts his song out slow. He can show that he can sing, you know, a little mellow. You know, he can belt it out when he wants to belt it out. But, you know, when he's got to bring it down, like the beginning of this, He still sounds great. You know, he can sing in that register. The guitar during the verse is great. The guitar solo is great. It's just another great song. Yep. Yeah. What can you say?
I wrote pretty similar. A lot of tempo changes, but they hold you where the tempo changes.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, no doubt.
Again, a little exhausting for my life.
But you can appreciate
the
quality of what's going on. Like I don't like everything I hear, but I can, like, a lot of genres we listen to, but you can appreciate the quality of, it's like, yeah, I'm not into this type of music, but that sounds good. You know what I mean? I'm not into it, but it doesn't mean it's not well written, and the playing isn't great on it, you know?
Die With Your Boots On?
Flight of
Icarus.
Oh, Flight of Icarus. Yep, sorry. I just wrote Good Groove. I said I was struggling with the vocal. I'm not sure why. I forget. But, yeah, good tune.
One of the staple songs of that our generation, I mean, Flight of Icarus.
Yeah, legendary. I mean, this is a single off this album. This is an MTV video accompanied this. Obviously, this is their single. McBrain is great drumming on this track.
You know, it's kind of
more classic Maiden, power Dickinson all over this.
It's kind of amazing how, like, dudes are so attracted to, like, the music. You know, I heard that, like, women are more attracted to the vocals and what they're saying. Because I have no idea what an Icarus is. Anybody out there know what an Icarus is?
No.
No, but...
Great song, though.
Great song. I mean, the video's cool, too.
All right, Die With Your Boots On.
I just remember I loved this song back in the day.
Great tune.
Oh.
I love the call and response. You know, it's like, if you're going to die, if you're going to die. You know what I mean? They kind of go back and forth with Dickinson in the background.
Right.
You know, Dickinson, you know, as usual, crushing the vocals on this again. This guy is, you know, rock solid through this whole album.
To me, it was more straight ahead than their other tunes so far.
But good. I mean, just.
Yeah, totally good.
Solid.
Yep. Dennis, Icarus is in Greek mythology. Icarus was the son of the master craftsman Danius. I don't even know how to pronounce that. An architect of Liberans. I don't even want to read it. Like some.
Wow.
It's right up his alley.
Well, I mean, this band is into mythology and you know. Singing about, you know, history. Yeah, I mean, that this is kind of molded this
battles
band.
Of
they're not singing about getting laid on a Sunset Strip and you know partying. You know, they sing about complex, you know, history. You know, and
they don't
things
have lyrics
going on.
Like "Get Up Is Gone on a Saturday Night." I've had 11 shots of whiskey.
Yeah, I mean, this is not their. Yeah, you know,
let me put my
forte.
Log in your fireplace.
all right, The Trooper.
What do you say about this song? Probably the greatest song they've ever written. I think it's the biggest song they've ever written. It's a staple. You're going to go see Iron Maiden live. This song's getting played every time.
Ripping solo.
Oh, the solo's great. Yeah. It's got the storm in the castle, but like we talked about early, that's what they were going for. Because the song is about kind of fighting the enemy, right? And going into battle.
Right.
So it fits. Where a lot of these other bands, we talk about Storm in the Castle, the lyrical content doesn't have anything to do with the music that's doing that.
Yeah.
Where this band is saying, yeah, we are storming the castle, or we are fighting the enemy, and we're waving a flag, and we're, you know what I mean?
Yep.
So it fits. To me, it fits great. It's a classic Maiden song. Harris is ridiculous on this, like most of the tracks. Awesome.
Yeah.
You can't say anything.
Awesome. Else. I mean, this is right there with, like, you have another thing. You got another thing coming with Judas Priest. I mean, these are all songs that just...
the verse separation is awesome.
It's just...
It's just so good.
Awesome.
All right. Still Life.
So Still Life, I don't know if anyone's aware of that kind of backward masking
yeah.
at the beginning. That's Nico McBrain.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I read
yeah they were having fun with that.
And it means nothing. It's right. gibber, I guess.
I read that they did that because this is around the same time of the PMRC.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. And they were trying to F with
that. And Nico's just screwing around. He goes, it doesn't even mean anything. If you played it straightforward, it's just a bunch of nothingness.
Yeah.
You know? But, of course, back then when you did that, you know, everyone goes for that satanic card.
Right.
You know, but which it wasn't about. Dickinson's great on this. Guitar playing and the intro's cool.
Yeah, I love the drum roll.
Yeah. I like the guitar playing in the verse. I like this song. And like I said, it's Dickinson just great at just telling a story. The guy's like, it's like he's reading a book to you.
Yeah.
You know
singing
what I mean?
A book. Yeah.
He's singing a book to you.
Yep.
You know?
Anything else? Next one?
Nope.
Quest for Fire.
Well, I get the same thing. More Dickinson storytelling.
Yeah.
I think this song, I don't know, I could be wrong. Correct me if I'm wrong. I think he's talking about the prehistoric era here. You know, Quest for Fire. It's a decent track. You know, obviously not as strong as, you know, Weird Eagles Dare or Trooper or anything like that. But
you're probably not hearing this at a wedding.
No, you're not hearing any of this at a wedding. But, Grace, even their like, B-sides and, you know, what do we call those songs? That are just, like, filler songs.
Yeah.
Strong. I mean, this song is still a solid track for these guys, you know?
All right, Sun and Steel.
I thought that was good. I mean, this is a quick song. It looked like in that attempt to be a single because it was such a short song. Love the lyric where you probably noticed this, where he says, "Break you both in two," and then he repeats it, "Break you both in two." You know, he just pulls you in. Yeah, the words are like catching, just the way he delivers.
I mean, this guy could write books. He could be an author.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just the way he writes lyrics.
You could,
but you're focusing
on the content.
But the words, okay, sure, the content. But I look at it also at the delivery, the way that he's delivering the songs.
Yeah.
And that's when, like, we talk a lot about Van Halen here, but, like, the way Dave just doesn't, like, if someone else read the lyrics to Panama, it'd be all right. But the way that Dave sings,
the delivery is, and
I think that's what's happening with Dickinson. He's just a way
he knows how
enunciates
to
a phrase or a lyric. It just
You could read the lyrics and go, you're just reading the lyrics. But yeah, like you said, it's how you present it.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, with the power and it's just.
That's what you feel when you hear it. You know.
Yeah, and I love that. There's some kind of chugging in that song. From the guitar playing, the way they chugged on it. I don't remember offhand now, but I just said wrote a note on it. I like the chugging guitar in the verse.
Yeah, I don't remember.
But, I mean, these songs are all just gems, you know?
Yep. To Tame a Land.
You know, I wrote, and this might have been a little bit of things to come from this band, but I thought this track would fit on Power Slave, which is the next album. You know, in that direction they went after Peace of Mind. You know, Harris is great. as usual on this. And there's some kind of breakdown shift in the middle of the song. It's ridiculous. They were doing something there where they just, it was just like the musicianship is just top notch. I mean, it was just, there weren't bands doing this.
This is the longest song on the album. Yeah. 7 minutes.
It's they're tight.
I wrote, is this a double live album? For a while, I was like, this is
a 7.5 minute track, right? Yep. It's just classic Maiden, and I think it was kind of where, it's funny how they ended with this song, and I think it's like the baton got passed to the next album. It's like, To Tame a Land is where Power Slave took over and said, this is the direction we're going on the next album.
Yeah, fair enough.
You know what I mean? It's just.
Did you go can, to this tour?
I did not. You did.
No,
oh,
I went. My first was actually Power
Slave. I didn't see
Slave
him until somewhere in town
with Heron. If you're listening,
oh Power
I
Slave.
I think we went to a Power Slave. I remember
see,
that.
That album. Yeah.
That was like the Egyptian, the pyramids and stuff. That was.
And
that
I got kind of that feel from this song. Like, this is where they wrote this song, and maybe like, yeah, this is the direction we can go with the next album, which, like you said, was more that Egyptian, which, you know, that album is another level itself.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
So, all right. So, say what you will. Does it hold up?
Absolutely.
Yes.
This is one of the most legendary rock heavy metal albums
of
all time.
Yes, Alex, I'll take more Iron Maiden for 200, please.
I think this album influenced how many heavy metal bands going forward. I mean, come on. If you're a rock musician and you're getting into the game and you want to play metal, this is your benchmark for how to 100%. Do it the right way.
Absolutely.
Here's a question for you, though. You got a gun to your head, and you're going to live in the woods for 4 years. You can only take one album. You take in Maiden or Judas Priest?
Which one?
I don't know. You
pick. Well, that's the problem. I think I'm taking. I think I'm taking Power Slave, Maiden.
Oh God, Derek. I'm probably.
But Priest, I mean, come on.
I'm probably taking Priest Screaming for Vengeance.
Yeah. Well,
I think I'm taking that
both?
One. Great question, man. Yeah. That's tough.
That album for me was my, childhood.
Which we did that album, right?
I think we did.
Was that the last podcast we did?
No.
I wasn't on that one.
I think it was just you and I.
Yeah,
Mark.
You and I did.
Then we brought in the big hitter, Dennis.
Yeah.
Oh,
well,
massive.
Yeah, like I said. Another benchmark album where, you're getting into, if you're going to get into heavy metal, listen to that album.
Yep.
If you want to, get off to a right start,
Yep. All right, who do you want to do next?
Hey, you want to do that Blackfoot?
Sure. Blackfoot. Again, these are all albums that came out in May of 1983.
Yeah, man.
40 years ago. Not
40
30
years
mark.
Ago, man. Huh?
40. 40.
40 years ago.
You told Glenn on on Facebook, we review albums from 30 years ago. I was like, 40 years ago.
Oh, was it 40? Jesus Christ.
That's all right.
Yeah.
It's a long freaking time. We're old.
Yeah, we are old.
All right, Blackfoot. How do you say this?
Siago.
Siago.
I don't know.
Which is basically, okay, go ahead. No, go ahead. Acronym. It's supposed to be suck it or get out.
What?
That's the.
Oh, you looked that up?
Yeah.
Oh,
they told the label it was like an Indian word for beautiful rise or beautiful sunset, whatever.
Oh, yeah.
But it's theirs for suck it or get out.
Okay.
So some of the stuff that I get, if you don't mind me jumping in, is, well, first of all, Blackfoot, we all know they had that one song, Southern rock band from the 70s, Train Train. That was their
biggest hit,
right?
Probably.
This is their sixth release. You know, so this is a different, well, we'll get into the songs, but I think that this is really, I think, a 70s Southern rock band
trying to
changing
find
their direction somewhat.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? To fit into 1983.
Right. I don't think it's as heavy as previous.
Ricky Medlock is
certainly not as Southern rock as they were known for.
And this is Ricky Medlock. Which we all
Ricky
know,
Medlock.
Yeah. Who is a lead vocals guitar player? He's currently in Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Right.
He was in Skynyrd when I did some research on him. He was a session guy for Lynyrd Skynyrd in the early 70s, but he played the drums.
Yeah, he started out as a drummer.
Yeah,
not in Skynyrd in his early years.
Right, but he did
Blackfoot.
Like when you look at like Medlock in the Skynyrd relationship in the early 70s, he basically was like a guy that was hanging out with, you know, Ronnie Van Zant, and
yeah,
he lived in the area. You know, he didn't necessarily participate on any of that music for Lynyrd Skynyrd, but he was good friends with those guys. And
I read that they connected themselves with the manager Butch Stone, who managed Black Oak, Arkansas.
Yeah.
And got real tight with them.
And I guess they were a Florida band.
Right? Black Oak?
Yep.
They were a Florida band that I guess moved to New York City, which is kind of uncharacteristic for a Southern rock band to be in New York.
Goes against, like, everything.
Yeah. But I guess they Medlock has some connections up there. And
this is from my house.
That's how they get signed, I guess, from being in New York City.
They opened for The Who on this tour, I think.
Really?
Yep.
Wow.
And the keyboard player was from Uriah Heep, right?
Yep.
Well, they had brought him in for
they
this
brought
album.
Him in for this
right.
album.
Yeah.
And what's funny, when jumping over to the band Warrant, their second album, they wanted to call Vertical Smiles. And these guys have an album. I think it's the next one called Vertical Smiles.
Oh,
it's,
really?
It's all pictures of crotch shots of ladies.
That was from Warrant?
Warrant wanted to name their album, but they were probably like, oh, Blackfoot already has an album. And then what's funny is Warrant covered Train Train on recording.
Oh, they did?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, let's see. Yeah, I don't think. So their last album release, this is what I was telling you about my friend Tim Rossi. Their last album release was in 2016. And my friend Tim Rossi, who's from Brentwood, New Hampshire, lives in L.A. I don't know if he still lives in L.A., but he wrote on that album guitar and sang. There's a video for it and everything.
I looked that up. I can't find any credits for him.
Well, what's funny, I don't know how it was separated. Like, they got the name somehow and did an album.
Really?
But you don't, yes, you're right. They don't show any credits.
Because I looked up, you know, Wikipedia, and I looked up all the albums. I'm like, I don't see his name.
But if you look up Tim Rossi and Blackfoot,
yeah,
you'll see his YouTube channel. And you'll
really?
See him doing, you know, he's sponsored and everything. So you'll see him doing interviews and talking about the new album. Then you'll see a link to the album, to the video that he did. It's
really
bizarre. Yeah.
Okay.
Pretty bizarre. I don't know why he wasn't credited.
So
technically I could go in there and update Wikipedia.
Stick him in there
in the show, but maybe he's hiding out and doesn't want that. So
this is produced by a guy, Al Nally, which I don't know this guy, you know, and
no.
I, you know, we've talked about producers and their control of music, songs, quality, and what comes in and out, and you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know what, I can't find anything on this guy as far as anything else he's done. I don't know.
Bum?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know the guy. I don't know what his credentials are, you know?
Yeah. All right, let's get into it. First song, Send Me an Angel.
I thought, you know, keys, are all over this. I think the vocals in the whole album are not bad. Ricky Medlock,
no, he's got a good voice.
He's not a bad singer, but for what they're trying to accomplish here, it doesn't fit. Yeah. This is not Southern rock.
No.
I thought this was just a bad attempt looking for radio airplay. Comes in at 4 minutes, 36 seconds.
Yeah, I guess the same old back to the castle. They're storming the castle again, right? Typical 80s cheesy guitar rhythm. I didn't like it.
Yeah,
it's crap.
I wrote, it doesn't sound like Southern rock. And
nothing.
No.
It almost sounded like a Kiss tune. Had not bad catchy chorus, but that was, wasn't...
Yeah.
Gung-ho over it.
Nothing there.
Crossfire.
It's funny. You know when you buy this album, you're like, if you're a Blackfoot fan, you probably got your cowboy hat on, and you're freaking listening to that first song going, what the hell is this? And then let's go to the next song, right? And then more the same.
It's funny you mentioned that keyboard player from Yara Heap. He came in to transition this band to fit more with the landscape and what was going on,
All right, so next tune is Crossfire.
Yeah, I got this sounds like a theme song to a bad Rocky movie. awful.
Yep.
I can't find anything redeeming about this song.
Right.
Weak.
I wrote that I dug the solo. Solo was good. A decent riff, classic drum fills.
How about the song, though?
Yeah, I know.
There's five guys that wrote this song, which is almost
needed six.
Too many cooks in the kitchen.
Yeah.
They may have needed six.
Four too many.
Oh, all right. Hearts Grown Cold.
Oh, this is awful.
I'm like...
I thought this sounded like this. Is this like Nazareth? I mean,
I don't know.
I went into it thinking this is like going to be, what other Southern rock band from Florida? Molly Hatchet. So I'm like, oh, it's going to be kind of riffy, heavy Southern rock. And this is not.
I got, where's the Southern rock?
Yeah.
I go, another cheaty 80s track. Garbage.
Yeah. All right. We're going down.
I thought this was, there are two songs on here that were, I would consider more hard rock, so to speak. And I wrote down a band name next to this. Like, I was like, oh my God, they're going for this. Rainbow. I just thought the way that the song was structured and the way I'm thinking they're like going in that direction. Medlock and Spires. Who's Spires? Oh, he's the drummer.
He's a drummer.
Yeah, they wrote that.
I got garbage.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, I mean, I wrote this should have been the opener of the album.
Yeah. Right.
It's a more rocking tune.
Yep. Yeah.
And it was definitely my favorite so far. And the vocal was way more rocking.
Yep.
Than the other two.
Yeah. Yep.
Yep.
This is all right.
Teenage Idol.
So I got Teenage Idol. Rocky's running through the streets of Philly, and everyone's cheering him on. Next. You know what I mean? It's just, it's almost like Survivor. The band
bad.
Survivor. It's a Rocky soundtrack. He's working out. He's getting ready for the big fight with fucking, what the hell's his name there?
Apollo.
Apollo Creed, which is typical of that era.
Yeah.
What do you got, Dan, on that?
Just terrible. I'm without words.
I guess that's what I was trying to say.
All I kept thinking is like Ricky Medlock. Maybe talk about a bad career choice. Should have just hung out with Leonard Skinner.
Yeah, exactly.
Eventually you're gonna get in that band somehow.
Yep.
Yeah, just wait for one to die.
Whoa, hey.
Well, they all did, right?
Yeah, now.
Yep.
I just wrote okay. Seems like a typical tune. I would just like a little more blues crunch from this.
Yeah, that's vocal. Non-existent.
No. Going in circles.
3 minutes, fast song. I thought this was like their desperate attempt at a single.
Yeah. That's right, guys. This is a 70s Southern rock band desperately trying to fit into the pop rock 80s landscape.
So, you know what's funny? I wrote, and you just mentioned this on the previous song, Dennis. I wrote, this sounds a lot like Since You've Been Gone by Rainbow. But it sounds like they were trying to create that.
Yeah.
I said it sounds radio ready, and I said probably because it sounds a lot like Since You've Been Gone. Yeah.
I think a lot
strong
of the
solo though. I wrote,
right,
strong solo.
And that's Medlock. I think a lot of these songs they're going for, they're trying. It's I wrote down Foreigner / Rainbow. Yeah. That was like the
without
like
the songwriting
the footprint they're going for,
but they're not getting.
No,
there.
Of course not.
Two
no
bands, by the way, aren't in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Uh huh.
Oh well, let's not get back into that, right?
All right, Run for Cover.
So I got at this point, I'm realizing Ricky Medlock sucks. Pretty much. Bad writing.
What? How do you feel?
Bad lyrics. Bad everything. I want to run from cover from Ricky Medlock at this point. This guy is overrated as far as I'm concerned. I don't know if he's responsible for, you know, all of this bad songwriting, but...
Well, they have that legendary producer working on this album. So.
Well, I'm sure he's got something to do with it, but Medlock's... Is Medlock writing these... songs? Yeah. I'm looking at it right here, Wikipedia. It's all Medlock. This guy is overrated as far as I'm concerned.
I hear you.
I don't know. You guys disagree with that? Or
no. I agree 100%.
Yep. Nope. All right. Next
cover
tune,
we just did.
White Man's Land.
I thought this was decent. Like the vocals a little bit here for the most part. The guitar tone.
Holy shit, that rain. You guys hear that rain?
it's a
we
rain.
We need the water.
I said it has the same feel and tempo and everything as Train Train. Like they were trying to do Train 2. Did you?
Yes, 100%. Yeah. You know, and if there's, you're going to look at this whole album, there's probably two songs that kind of got a little bit of rock going, like hard rock, and it's moving. We're Going Down, and then the White Man's Land, in my opinion.
Yeah, I got finally a half-decent song, right?
Yep.
And Medlock sounds better on this track than previous songs. But, you know, I go, I don't know if this is really a good song or the first seven are just so bad that it makes a song sound good because you just heard some weak material. And then finally this song comes out. But it's a pretty good song. Good guitar solo. I mean, the guitar playing on this and the music on this is good.
40 years ago, you'd have to buy the whole album.
Oh,
nowadays, you'd... cost 99 cents.
Right.
By one song.
To listen to that song.
Well, I was glad I just was able to listen to it on Spotify and then kick it out of my shuffle. But we're not done yet. Come on. We've got Sail Away.
I don't have much on this. I got okay song, I guess. Decent guitar work. You know, the guitar playing's pretty good on it. Okay.
I thought this sounded like they were going after Rainbow.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we've mentioned
Rainbow
it a couple
Foreigner.
Of times.
Yeah.
That
this song for sure.
They're reaching for that. Yeah.
I said when it started, I was hoping it was going to evolve into a heavier tune, but it just didn't seem to have it.
Yeah. No.
And it seemed all over the place too.
Yeah.
All right, Driving Fool.
Oh my God. fast paced. Not a great song.
No, I got. Sounds like a crappy I Can't Drive 55 kind of song. Medlock's lyrics suck. I don't like this guy. He's overrated. You know, I really didn't realize how incompetent this guy is. And let's be straightforward right now. this guy would never be in Lynyrd Skynyrd original lineup. No. This guy could not be in that band.
No. Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
No way.
I just wrote up-tempo rocker, and I said the very ending of the song, it was funny. There's a car door slam. Here's some weird vocal people talking. You can't make it out, but it was pretty funny.
Yeah, well, at least you shut the door in this album.
I'd say go back and listen, but you don't have to. So, Mark, hey, say what you will. Does it hold up?
Absolutely not.
Did it ever hold up?
No. This doesn't hold up now. It didn't hold up then. Awful.
I hear you. Dennis?
Nope.
Those are three no's there.
And I've read some reviews with this album did awful. Sales-wise.
Well, they had to stick with the formula, Southern Rock.
Well, they're a band that's trying to do something that's not in their wheelhouse. You know what I mean? It's like you're a Southern Rock band, you know, and I read some stuff where Southern Rock in 83 was really not happening anymore.
Then change your name. Don't call yourself Blackfoot.
Why not? Well, yeah.
Yeah, be on the Billboard Top 200.
Yeah. So
MTV, Blackfoot.
They're trying to find a way.
Let's dance
in a landscape that it's not
there for them.
Their thing,
yeah.
And it showed.
Yep. All right, last album, Dio, Holy Diver. Now, did we do a Dio album already? Or have we just talked about like the documentary and stuff?
Yeah, no, I don't think we've done Dio yet.
Nope.
All right, because I just wrote a couple of things like how he found Vivian Campbell. I think we talked about it on one of the podcasts.
Right.
Where did he find him? Because this guy was an unknown, right?
In Europe.
Sweet Savage.
Okay.
Was the band. It was an Irish band.
So he's...
I think you'll call him Marcus Sweet Savage.
Is that where he's from? Is he in
Ireland.
England? Ireland? Okay.
Now he's from... Newcastle, New
He lives answer. About 10 minutes from you.
That's right.
He lives over my way.
Yeah.
I don't know where, but it'd be funny to find out where. Christ, I've probably seen him at the beach, and I didn't even know it was him. Two-time platinum. Went gold in 3 months, this album.
Mm.
As it should.
Are you anything, Dennis?
Yeah, so some pushback on the album artwork at the time. Seeing a priest with chains trying to getting pulled down in the ocean by a devil.
Remember how it was made, though, that album cover? They talked about it in the documentary.
Yeah, that was cool.
They were actually, Ronnie went out to the ocean with, it was a photographer or was it just a guy drawing? I think it was a photographer, yeah.
Photographer,
yeah.
And
they were taking he was in the priest outfit, right?
Right.
And they were taking pictures of him. And then, you know, he kind of had him paint it and twist it into whatever he wanted. But
yeah,
he was out in the freezing cold getting crashed by waves and pretty cool.
So
well, what's interesting is this Ronnie Dio produced this album.
Right.
He wrote like almost everything on it. You read in the documentary, he talks about him sitting down in his garage and writing Holy Diver, like playing bass. Just getting on the bass and recording. He was at a crossroads after he left Sabbath. Didn't know what he was going to do, right?
Right.
What he was talking about. And then he just sat down and said, I got to write some of my own music.
What I think when you do some research here, and it's really when you think about this, it's making sure that people understand perspective. This is 1983, right? What's going on in 1983?
You got Blackfoot.
Blackfoot. The Dungeons and Dragons game was very popular. People were getting into that. That whole fantasy vibe,
right.
That framework was getting very popular. So here comes Dio talking about Dungeons and Dragons. Right.
And they had their own mascot.
Right.
Like Murray. Maiden had Eddie, I think he was called Murray.
Murray.
So the thing about this, and this is the same thing with Iron Maiden, Priest probably before that, is it, here we go, US Billboard reached number 56, let's celebrate and party, right? That's incredible. Number 56, that's it? And then UK, it was number 13. So I think here...
Yeah, but it's because it's heavy metal, Dennis.
Yeah, I mean, but what I'm saying is that this is great music. It's paving the way to what is to come without any recognition or commercial success.
Of course, yeah.
Because they're the ones that are starting this. They're creating this... This groundswelling of, you know, this music, this heavy music, hard rock, heavy metal, that's eventually gonna become the Sunset Strip and the Motley Crues and the Great Whites and the Rat and all that Dokken and stuff, but they're not getting at this time, not getting that recognition.
No,
yeah, you
know? No, they're paving the way here. Yeah, you know?
And when you think about the lineup. And, you know, you got Vivian Campbell, who was taken out of Ireland or whatever. You know, basically, Jimmy Bain, who was a session guy.
These are unknown guys.
Vinny, bunch of nobodies.
Except you got
Vinny Appice.
Vinny Appice was Carmine's brother.
Yeah, but a nobody.
He was in Black Sabbath.
But he did one album with Sabbath. He did Mob Rules, which was
with
a phenomenal. Well, I know, but he did Black Mob Rules, Black Sabbath, Heaven and Hell, right,
yeah,
with Dio.
Dio,
and then Mob Rules, and the drummer in Heaven and Hell was Bill Ward. Mob Rules was Vinny Appice.
You're right.
And so really kind of a nobody when you think about it.
No, his brother got him into business somehow, right? Got him some connections.
Much like Steve Brown.
Mild Steve Brown. Not like Wild Mick Brown, right?
I think when you look at this album, and I know we're going to get into the details soon, but the unsung hero in all this, we're all going to say.
I'm going to tell you what
you're
going
to
say.
Well, hold on a minute. We're all going to say, well, obvious it's Dio. We agree.
No, not
unsung, but being the star, I'm going to say it's Jimmy Bain.
I disagree.
I think Jimmy Bain, the bass line and what he's doing, to me, when I listen to this again, you know, like 2023, I'm like,
oh, great.
What's an example?
Stand Up and Shout, all these songs. I just, his bass line, the way boom, 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 boom.
But that was written by Dio.
No, I know, but his
playing. Yeah, I know. Wow, I mean, what did he write? He's not writing the bass lines, is he?
Yeah, they came up with a vocal over it and started writing.
I just think he sounds great.
Yeah.
So,
what were you going to say?
Campbell.
Oh, Campbell. Yeah.
I think Campbell is the unsung hero in this whole album. I've got
unsung.
This in my,
no,
in
I
my
think
notes
it's...
here that this Campbell
character.
Oh my God! I mean, the riffs on this album. This is this guy's greatest body of work.
See, to me.
Right?
To me, I think it's...
Not the latest Def Leppard album?
Yeah. Well, no. Exactly what I'm saying. This is this guy's greatest body of work.
See, I think it's... To me, maybe because I'm such a huge fan, it's obvious. To me, you know, and I understand what you're saying. I don't disagree with that.
Yeah.
And to a certain extent, it's almost like this is a super group. Because Appice plays well as well.
The whole band.
It's an amazing first album.
Yeah, you know, I mean.
Like entry album.
So we should get, when people listen to this podcast and want to provide feedback, they should, you know, what do they hear when they hear these songs? I mean, you know.
Yeah.
Well, what stands out? I think is what you're saying. Yeah. And obviously, Dio stands out. Obviously, as the
it's just a great release.
Let's get into the songs.
Okay,
will we please? All right, Blackfoot. Stand Up and Shout.
Oh, I got great opening track. Great riff. I mean, the riff in this song is awesome. Campbell's ripping on this one. Dio's vocals are amazing. I love the rhythm behind the guitar solo. Great track. Great opening track. Great song all the way around.
Dennis?
Yep, 100%. I mean, guitar, drums. I think Bane's bass. Everything, my God.
There.
You know?
Yeah. I wrote an amazing opening track.
Yeah.
And let me say this, too. I Dio's another vocal that I'm not really into. I'm not into the, Lord of the Rings. And the,
right.
You know,
and
that
that's what this is. This is like fantasy.
Right. Dungeons and Dragons. Like you right. Said, and
it's undeniable.
This is an amazing opener. I'm assuming the live opener.
That's what I would think on this tour. They open with that, right? You come out of the gate with this, right?
And Campbell has these awesome harmonics right before going into the chorus that are so freaking cool. And he does them again later, and I'm like, wait a second. This sounds a lot like... Sykes.
Yeah.
And I was like, was this before that Sykes album? Was this,
Well, 83, Sykes was probably still in the Slide It In era, right?
Well,
when was
this is before
81, 82, right?
I don't know when Slide It In was. But those harmonics were like, oh my God, they were freaking awesome. And I said, just kicked you right in the face, this tune.
Great opener.
Yep. A little ditty called Holy Diver.
Oh, yeah, title track, right?
Yeah.
Another great guitar riff. Classic song. I think this is the beginning of, like you just touched on, Ronnie's mythical style.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's getting into that whole thing. Great track.
I mean, that's why I wrote a great track. I wrote here. Probably one of the reasons I wasn't into this at 13 or 14. It was like scary to me. Like,
it's just, almost. There was nothing like this.
Yeah.
So going on. When I look at this, there were two songs that were like the so-called singles, the popular songs back in those days. In my opinion, it was Holy Diver and then, of course, Rainbow in the Dark. To me, this was like the redheaded stepchild. Holy Diver
this
was like
could have been
like that. Like the metalheads would say, "Well, Rainbow in the Dark's good, but that's too popular for me. I'll take the Holy Diver."
Yeah. Exactly.
I also wrote that it was a simple song, but the melody worked perfect with the riff and the bass groove.
Destruction.
Like he fits right the vocal fits. Right in the pocket.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Yep. And then I said, great part going into the solo. I don't know what it was. Don.
Yeah.
All right.
Just another great track.
Next one, Gypsy.
Oh, my God. This, to me, is my favorite. Just everyone has their own personal. To me, Gypsy, I love the riff. And the way Dio just sings this. Just the way he delivers.
It's almost like his phrasing.
Yeah.
You know, like his vocal phrasings are just outstanding.
Yep.
You know and Campbell.
Yeah, I mean, I got more powerful Dio vocals, ripping Campbell solo, right? I mean, he's shredding on these freaking solos on this whole album. I mean... Great song.
Was Campbell the band he was in? Was it signed, or was he just playing in?
I don't know anything.
I think
him
they did
that.
Have a record label, but it was just a European. They didn't. There was no success in U.S. or anything. Yeah.
So he must have been like, "This is my shot."
Oh
yeah,
my God.
Yeah, 100%. Yep.
When I see him in Rye sometime, I'll ask him.
Yeah, you might. You never know.
Well, they're out on tour forever.
Yeah.
Caught in the Middle.
I got love Campbell's guitar playing on this whole track. I love the vocal phrasing on this track. It's another great, great song.
I thought this seemed like an attempt at a single.
I wrote the same fucking thing. I'm confident that he wanted this song to be a pop-type single.
Exactly.
But great.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. The way it was structured.
Campbell is just I don't know. That's why we go back to unsung hero, Dennis. You're talking about a guy that nobody has ever heard of, right? And he's coming out and delivering this on an album.
Right.
I mean,
and you got to give Dio credit because there's a lot of guys out there, like right now, that are incredible guitar players, but who finds them? And Dio found them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
How did he find this guy? I mean, how do you?
That's a good question. Yeah.
Oh, so you know? There you go. Yeah, I wrote about it being wanting to be poppy. It had all the elements, the tempo, the flow. The chorus just wasn't catchy enough to be poppy, I think.
Yeah.
Like a sing-along thing. Like I said, and I think, well, I did a little digging on the track, and Vivian brought this one from his previous band, Sweet Savage. And it was called Straight Through the Heart. So there's a little.
Which is a Dio song.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, that's what they talked about, that it later became a Dio song. So. And I wrote. What did I write for you? What the hell was I saying? It was actually a part in the first measure of the verse that has the sense of can't get it right, Mark.
Oh, really? I have to go back and listen to that.
Yeah, it reminded me a little bit of it.
Yeah.
Finger must have took that.
I'll go back and listen to that.
Just kidding, Mike. don't talk to strangers.
I remember.
Every time I say that title, I just think of DC. Don't talk to strangers.
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead.
I remember when I first heard this, thinking to myself, well, here comes a ballad. Like every band, and then next thing you know it, like I'm out of my chair on the floor.
Rips your face off.
You know, just all Dio here.
Yeah. Well, I got the verse guitar almost has a Randy Rhoads style to it.
Yeah.
Something you'd hear maybe off that first Ozzy album. I heard that kind of feel from his style.
But what about Dio's vocal?
Yeah,
when it's like,
come on. I mean, his vocals are getting stronger as his album goes
on. And how about the line, don't dream of women, they will only bring you down. And when he goes into down, like, classic
power.
Dio. Classic Dio.
Oh, yeah. And, of course, Campbell's shredding on this solo again.
What?
I mean, this guy.
Someone's going to crush
him. Again, another song you're not going to hear at a wedding reception.
I love the guitar playing on this album. I don't know.
All right. What do we got?
Straight Through the Heart?
Straight Through the Heart.
Oh, my God. Wow, what a heavy
riff. Favorite track off the album.
What a heavy riff.
Campbell pulling out more great riffs out of his hat here. When you just think that this guy doesn't have any more riffs, he comes out with this one.
Oh, this is, yeah.
Dio's vocals getting stronger as the album goes on. My favorite track off this album. Killer.
I wrote great little pauses, amazing riff. I wrote here on this one, kind of Sykes-like.
Oh, there's so much power.
Great drum fills. I don't remember what they are. You think
yeah.
The chorus is very heavy. Great guitar.
Oh, the guitar play.
Great guitar. Yeah. I said this would be a great live tune.
Oh, no doubt. Dan, what do you got?
Well, I agree with you. Heavy riff. This was one of the top songs on the release.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't add anything more than what you both said. I mean, it's just...
It's my favorite. When this song comes on, it's just like, man.
I mean, when Dio is singing, you can just hear the spit landing on the microphone.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just like
the
into
power.
The
power of this guy.
For a little guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Crazy. And apparently he commanded the audience amazingly, too. I never saw them.
Well, the thing is with
born him. In Portsmouth, New Hampshire.
Yes.
The thing with this guy is his visual, when you went and saw him, fit. The vocals.
Yeah.
Like, you wouldn't saw him as like, that's what I envisioned this singer looking like and acting like on stage. He just fit the whole persona of the songs, you know?
Yeah. I hear you. All right, Invisible.
Let me start by saying that I think this is kind of Black Sabbath-y, like from his first. That's the way I found the riff.
Yeah.
But to me, Campbell shreds in this. This is...
Who's that?
Vivian Campbell.
Campbell, is he on this album? I haven't heard anyone talk about
it. Oh, my God.
To me, this song identifies him. This got one of the best songs that identify him as an amazing guitar player. If you listen to that again, that song again, you listen, unbelievable.
So I got
How's the rain sound?
Yeah. I love Vivian Campbell. That's how I started this out.
I got a crush on Vivian Campbell.
I love Vivian Campbell. More great guitar playing.
I love Derek.
Love the breakdown section into the solo. I got chills listening to this song. I love this song. The stuff he's just playing in this song.
I mean, he's shredding.
Godly.
Yeah.
This guy is... This is the best, I don't know, stuff I've ever heard from this guy. I've never heard anything else. Well, maybe what was it? Lesson Line, I guess, there was some great stuff on that album, too. But this is this guy's shining moment. This guy is coming out from an unknown guitar player and just ripping your face off. Right?
Right.
Yeah.
Great example of his.
I mean, I just think of today and how well he fits in with Def Leppard.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, that's a cash grab.
I remember when he was in Whitesnake. I'm like, what are you doing?
Well,
what are you
that
doing?
That makes more sense.
And
yeah,
I wanted
you're probably right.
I wanted to bring this up. I don't know. Well, I didn't know this until you had mentioned that Dio wrote most of this stuff, because I was going to say, if Campbell wrote a lot of this material, it's probably one of the last things he's done is the first Dio albums, because when he left and went to Whitesnake, he went in as a hired hand. Mm-hmm. He didn't write that album he toured with. I don't know who wrote on the second Whitesnake, Slip of the Tongue, which I think was Vi, and then he went to Def Leppard. So this is this guy's shining moment. Yeah. This is this guy's best material over the last 40 years, right? What has he done as far as songwriting since this?
You know, you wonder about the Def Leppard connection.
Adrenalized by Def Leppard.
Yeah, I don't even think he was in that one.
I don't even know what his writing contributions are in Def Leppard. Is Colin writing all that shit?
He's doing most of the songs.
I mean, this guy is on autopilot in Leppard. He ain't playing this stuff.
No.
No.
He ain't playing like this. He don't have a chance to even show what he's capable of doing, right?
And there's another, like, something going on here that we don't have time to talk about, I'm sure, but his whole relationship with Windy Dio and the fact that he didn't, I'm not sure, but I thought I heard he didn't get paid like he should have
paid
that
for that material.
And that's why he left.
Right.
Yeah.
He wasn't getting.
He wanted a cut, but they said, you know, Dio was like, no, this is my.
And Dio's like, stupid.
This was Dio's, like, he had been kind of fucked over with Sabbath. And Elf wasn't paying that much. And
Yeah, but how do you not take care of this guy?
No, I know.
If this guy comes in playing guitar like this, what do you want? I can pay you whatever you want.
I think Dio maybe figures like he can find another one.
Yeah, Craig Goldie? I mean, come on. This guy is not.
Yeah.
He's never had a guitar player like this guy.
So he's in Leopard. Playing Pour Some Sugar on Me.
He's on autopilot.
Animal, and he's on autopilot. But then he's also doing the Last in Line band. Yeah.
Well, that's because he needs to get...
Because he's getting it out.
Right.
You know, let it rip.
Yeah.
Somehow.
Yeah. All right, next one. Rainbow in the Dark.
Never heard of it.
No, me either.
Oh, my God.
Okay. Clearly the hit single off the album. More straightforward, right? Radio friendly, they stuck to kind of the format, you know, to get on the radio, but still classic.
Massive
Dio.
Probably
it's classic.
probably the heaviest keyboard song I've ever heard in my life.
That's what I wrote. And I wrote, it feels like they almost did that to give it a poppier element to get it
right.
More airtime.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it was a well-structured song. I mean, obviously they were a little conscious of this song. You know, they're like, we need a single here, right? You got these great songs that you and I love, but we don't love the singles, right? Mm. We've never been guys that we like the deep cuts. We like the heavy
B-set,
stuff.
Yeah.
But, I mean, as far as producers and record labels and the band, they want one. They want one.
Yeah.
Right? And then this was it, you know?
Shame on the Night.
I put okay. It probably the weaker song on the album. The playing's amazing, as usual. Yeah. I thought this was kind of like a Sabbath-y vibe with the
very Sabbath-like.
Yeah, definitely.
With the blues, yeah. You know, slow blues going on.
Yep.
You know, I mean, 5 minutes, 29 seconds.
Well, so, right. I mean, I got long. Dio's voice is still as strong as it was on the first track, right? This guy just doesn't run out of steam. Oh. This guy is, you know, and I'm like, how does a guy 5 foot tall generate so much power? This guy is like a dwarf. It's funny he was in a band called
Elf,
because he is one, right?
Yeah.
But this guy sings like he's fucking 7 feet tall. I mean, this guy's got more power in his voice than I've heard any, you know, maybe outside of Halford, right? This guy is just so much power. It's, you know, cool song, not as strong as the rest of the album as you just alluded to. But not a bad song. I mean, it's just, when you get the rest of this, you know, group of songs here, but still a good tune.
Yeah, like I said, I wrote the Sabbath Light, and what's interesting in the song, there's a little like duck sound, and it reminded me of Ozzy uses the same thing at the end of, it's in Blizzard of Oz, I don't know what song, but I'm like, huh, it's like the same little bit.
And they're all intertwined, right? All this, you know, Rainbow, Dio, Purple, all these guys are all intertwined. They all kind of, you know, pick from the same, you know, mythical, you know, kind of theme.
Yep.
You know what I mean? That's why they're always in and out of the same bands, because they all have that same kind of, you know.
All right, say what you will. Dennis, hold up?
Yes.
Yes. Legendary album.
Three yeses.
Absolutely.
Wow. All right, rate the three albums today. What's the order? What's number three?
I'm going to go. Oh,
Blackfoot.
This one's tough.
All right.
Blackfoot.
Yeah. All right, what's two? As the rain comes down.
Yeah. This one's tough. I mean.
Okay, so.
You got to take on the ride home tonight. You got to listen to one of those albums.
Oh, God.
I don't know how you.
It's almost impossible. I'm just going to. I'll say Deal 2, Maiden 1. And, like, you asked me 5 minutes from now, I'd probably do the opposite.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
I mean.
I'm going to go. Man, I don't know. I'm going to go Maiden 2, Deal 1. But, like Dennis said, I could change my mind 5 minutes from now. They're just parallel to each other. What do you got?
I'm
either one.
I'm Iron Maiden 2.
Dio.
Yeah. So let's see here. Let me. All right. So let's look at June. The albums that came out, the rock albums that came out in June are Motorhead, Another Perfect Day. No insight. Okay. No. Twisted Sister, You Can't Stop Rock and Roll. And Lover Boy, Keep It Up. Those
all right.
The three we have to choose from. Those will be good.
Do our homework.
Yeah.
Do our homework. So, yeah. Let us know what you feel. Let us know what you think on Twitter or in the show notes. You'll see the link to the Facebook group.
we can try to get that going and let us know what you think and comment on the YouTube channel too. Any parting words, Mark?
Nope. Denny?
Go Panthers now that the Bruins
go Panthers. We're watching the Panthers tonight.
No, I think the feedback, as Derek said, you know, if you can provide feedback, that's important because you're here absolutely with us. And most of you, maybe all of you, have experienced these bands somehow growing up or recently, and it'd be interesting to hear what you got to say, whether absolutely you agree or disagree.
Yeah. And and definitely more feedback on iTunes. That helps out tremendously. So get over there and give us a shout. Stand up and shout. All right,
stand
cool
up and shout.
Awesome.
All right, peace.
Good night from the camper, right?
Good night from the camper.
Yeah.